Mr. Chair, I wonder if I could ask you to listen to Mr. Sharp first.
If you're happy to step aside, Mr. Cole, I'm quite happy to listen to Mr. Sharp. If you'd like to come forward.
Sorry, I do have a PowerPoint presentation which I was supposed to be.
Sorry, did you tell someone you were bringing a presentation? Try and sort that out. Thank you, Mr. Sharp. You have 5 minutes and then councillors may wish to ask a question.
Mr. Mayor, Tony Sharp says that he's having trouble with the technicalities, and I certainly can't help him, so I'll proceed first in that,
okay, thank you,
in that case. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you on the subject of the recently advertised proposed development at lots 109-110 Dunbay Road in Dunsborough, the six-storey development that has been advertised and for which submissions have been called, and I have provided a submission to the city on behalf of Dunsborough 2030. I've also circulated that to councillors and also written to councillors and yourself, Your Worship. Thank you for your email in return. I don't propose to repeat what I said in those... we're going to have a music background or what is it? I don't propose to repeat those submissions at all. I hope you've had an opportunity to read them, if not the letter to councillors, at least the submission to the city. We, of course, hope that the planning staff of the city will agree with our submission. And I must say, I have the greatest respect for the professionalism and integrity of the planning staff. So I'm hopeful that we will get some agreement from them. I respect their integrity, but it would be good to know what their attitude will be fairly soon. And the reason for that is time is very short on this matter. On our calculations, and I think Mr. Needham agrees with it, a hearing by the Development Assessment Panel needs to be held reasonably early in January. I don't know whether that date has been fixed as yet. I believe not, because I can't see any meeting date having been fixed, but it'll have to be around about that time because the time for dealing with a development application runs out around that time. So, given the Christmas break, time is extremely short. And we come here today to suggest to the council that if it needs to, because it disagrees, perhaps, with the responsible authority report prepared by the planners, it will need to do so either at the next council meeting, which I think would be almost impossible, but nevertheless potential, or alternatively at a special meeting of the council. And I say if it wants to, because in our view, and I don't think there's any doubt about this, it is open to the council to disagree with the planner's report to the development assessment panel and make its own submission or even attach its own views to that report. That is clear from the DAP manuals that it's open to it. Now, I understand that there's been some criticism in this council, or at least within the city, to that procedure on the grounds that it's complicated, it's makes life very difficult for everybody. But the fact of the matter is that it's a route for ensuring the community and the council, elected council's views are well known to the development assessment panel, which is used by a number of local governments around this state. In fact, several of them, I could quote to you, have manuals that deal exactly with that point. In other words, they demonstrate that it's an appropriate way for the council's and the community's views to be aired. Now, this particular application from Planning Solutions on behalf of the owners of the land are, in our view, deficient in several ways. The most important, in my opinion, is that they do not attempt to satisfy the element objectives in relation to the height of the building at all. I'm sure you would all know that the critical issues in relation to the height of the building are the streetscape and the desired character of the neighbourhood or the local area. When you read the Planning Solutions submission or application, it simply says the streetscape and the desired character of the building are observed in this application. That's all it says. It doesn't attempt to say how or why or in what way it does that. But let's very quickly examine two parts of that. Streetscape. I defy anyone to say that a six-storey building in that location in Dunbay Road accords with the streetscape of the of Dunbay Road, or indeed Cerulean Way, which is the minor street off it. It would stretch anybody's imagination to think that a six-storey building in the midst of buildings that are all two stories or lower, one or two stories, could possibly be in sync with the streetscape of the building. You only need to look at the Coles Centrepoint development to say, how could a six-storey building next to that possibly fit? You only need to look at the proposed new buildings on the old Pico Pico site to say, how could that possibly work in that street? You only need to look at the one-storey buildings on the other side of Dunbay Road to know that this doesn't fit the streetscape. Now, the developer's entitled to say, but what about the buildings that are going to disappear in the foreseeable future? Surely it can fit within whatever replaces them. Well, I defy anyone to find a building other than the Forum Shopping Centre and the BP service station in Dunbay Road at that end of it, which has any remote possibility of being redeveloped in the foreseeable future. This building proposal does not fit the streetscape of Dunbay Road or the centre of Dunsborough generally. Secondly, desired character. Those are the terms used in the element objectives. What is the desired character of Dunsborough? Well, I think the people of Dunsborough know very well what it is. They've expressed themselves forcefully on a number of occasions. And the question is, whose desire are we talking about? Are we talking about the planner's desire? Are we talking about the government's desire? Or are we talking about the community's desire? And I suggest there's only one possible way that you can interpret that. It is all about the community. Now, I've referred to a decision by Judge Parry of the State Administrative Tribunal in a matter involving the Midland City Council, not actually a DAP matter, but following the same element objectives. And it's extraordinary the lengths to which Judge Parry interpreted the evidence of the neighbours and the community in that case, down to the last degree. And he found that the proposed development was so out of character with the neighbourhood and the desired character of the neighbourhood that the application had to be refused, and he did refuse it on that ground. Mr. Kotsoglo, in his application, simply says this fits the desired character and streetscape. Doesn't say why, doesn't say how, doesn't say what evidence he has to substantiate that. He doesn't say what investigations he's made to interpret that. Hasn't said, I've gone to see all the neighbours and they don't have a problem. Nothing of that sort at all. It's just said in very brief form, as if it has to be true because he said it. 1 minute. Has anyone been down there and asked the neighbours of this proposed development? Has anyone been there and seen the business proprietors in Dumbay Road and said, do you consider this fits within our streetscape? Maybe you have. I'd like to know it if you have. Have you spoken to the community generally? Because in the past, the community and the Dunsborough Outcomes report says 92% of them said, no way are you going to have high rise. The point is this. Woolies, with its proposal, the Pico Pico people, the new owners there, with their proposal, fitted into the streetscape. This one does not. What can you do about it? In my submission, clearly you must find out what the officers are going to say. Clearly you must do that. Because it may be that the RAR will be a very forceful statement of opposition to this application. But if they don't, then it's within your power, your realm, to say, we disagree, this is what the community thinks, this is what the council thinks, and this is what we are going to submit to the Development Assessment Panel. And hopefully, persuade Mr. Mayor, you and Councillor Carter in due course, that perhaps you could take up the cudgels. I know you can't talk about it now, but this application is going to need a very, very strong opposition, because development assessment panels tend to favour the developers' opinions. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Councillors, are there any questions of Mr. Cole, who's just taken up Mr. Sharp's 5 minutes as well? Councillor Richards.
Yes, thank you, Peter, for presenting that to us. And yes, I have spent the last 2 days down in Dunsborough talking to businesses and the community, and there are actually a number of concerns regarding this proposal, and I think there's a couple of other people that are going to speak to that tonight. But I wonder, Mr. Needham, I don't know if it's appropriate for me to say, but or to ask the question. Does the RAR reflect the sentiment that the Dunsborough 2030 group have brought?
The RAR hasn't been drafted as yet. The RAR will represent a professional assessment of the planning issues, and will consider the issues raised in the submissions. But I'm not in a position to advise of what the recommendations are out the RAR will be until it's completed and I've signed it and it's been published.
What is the date for the deadline for that RAR, Mr. Nab?
Yeah, so the date of submission required is the 20th of December, so we're working to that date. Mr. Kyle is correct that that would point toward a DAP meeting in early January. So yes, that's what we expect at this stage, and for a range of reasons, including logistical ones around that time of year, we're seeking to engage with the what's called the DAPS Secretariat ahead of time to try and get a pretty good idea of what date they will set, rather than leaving that to, you know, Christmas Eve or something like that. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Needham, when was the scheme amended to allow this height in the Dunsborough CBD? Can you tell me?
I can't remember the exact date, but it's 2016, I think.
Early 2017.
Early 2017.
I thought you might have that, yeah.
And was there community consultation done prior to that change? So there was no objection from the community? I mean, it's sounding very much like the same issues that we've had with our previous scheme amendment that we've just done, in that apparently there was no community objection to it, but were the community aware of it when it went through?
Through Mr. Mayor, the amendment that introduced the RAC3 coding over the land subject of this application was the same amendment that introduced the R80 coding over the land that affected the Geograph Bay Road apartment proposal. So it was the same amendment. The consultation material that was put together that went to the community made it very, very clear that an outcome at that point of an RAC3 coding would be general height control of six storeys. Now, the R codes have changed to some degree in the interim, and so the effect of that, and that's the effect of the RAC3 coding is slightly different to what it would have been at the time, but that's that sort of thing happens with R codings. That's the way that happens. But were there submissions against it? I can't recall off the top of my head. I think there may have been. But obviously any submissions that were received would have been considered by the council before it made a recommendation to the Planning Commission, and ditto the Planning Commission in terms of a recommendation to the Minister and the Minister as well.
And just a supplementary, if I may, Mr. Mayor, because I'm curious to know, in light of what's happened with the recent amendment that we put through, when we did the town workshops, when we did the Dunsborough Townscape workshops recently, did the planning department not maybe think that perhaps this kind of height may become an issue? But prior to us actually receiving, now obviously that we've received an application, it's far more problematic to change it, rather than if we had have considered this after 2016, that we may at some point get an application like this and there would be pushback from the community, which is obviously what's occurring now, which is...
Yes, so for me, Mr. Mayor, I can... Yes, we're certainly aware that there's been and weren't surprised at the outcome. The mechanism to reconsider that is through what's called the precinct structure plan for Dunsborough, which we have been working on. We did make the point when the council initiated Amendment 50 that would draw some resources away from the precinct structure plan process. Look, whether it would have made a difference in this particular case, I can't tell you. I can't put my hand on my heart and say it would have made a difference one way or the other, but it certainly did affect our ability to advance the precinct structure plan. But we're certainly trying to prioritise that project at the moment.
Mr. Mayor, I wonder if I could just comment on one brief point there.
Very quickly, Mr. Cole.
I think the relevant paperwork that went out in relation to Omnibus Amendment 1, which is a horrific document in itself, actually referred to 4 to 5 storeys, not 6. perhaps it's not fundamentally different, but I think the community expectation was quite clearly contrary to what was the acceptable outcome under the RAC 3 code. Secondly, the URBIS design report, which was canvassed only or produced only about a year ago, if I recall rightly, talks about a contemporary seaside vernacular, that being the preferred character of Dunsborough. They were not talking about the Gold Coast. They were talking about Dunsborough, and it's fundamentally different. And you have to comply with the element objectives, not just the allowable height.
Okay, thanks. I think you've responded. Councillor Cronin?
Question probably to both Mr. Needham and to yourself. Mr. Joe. Peter, sorry. Was prior to COVID, would any of these type of developments just come straight up to council? Be sent to the JDAP? Sort of in the 5 million, or would everything like this go to?
No, so the COVID related reforms, the State Development Assessment Unit hasn't affected.
All right, so they're pushing through quickly, nothing has.
No, with respect, Council, I think you're confusing the State Development Assessment Unit, which is the new pathway that was introduced midway through last year.
Yep.
Which the amongst others, the Smith Breach proponents are looking to utilise, but that's not relevant to this a development application of this value. So over 10 million would have been a compulsory JDAP application, right, since the introduction of the DAPs in, 2014, something like that. I may not have the date exactly.
Yeah, following on really from Councillor Cox's questioning of what's changed. You know, this has been in place for a long time and we're always sort of chasing our tails. And yes.
I think the what has changed in this particular case is the very, very short timetable that's available as a result of, first of all, the invitation for submissions going out at least a month after the application was received, and secondly, from the outcome from the onset of Christmas, frankly. Yeah. In a normal circumstance, it might be relatively easy to call a special council meeting to consider this. Over the Christmas period, that would be difficult. Not impossible. A third of this council can call a special council meeting if it wants to, in order to decide whether it wants to make some statement of its own. But the time frame hasn't been altered as long as the development assessment panel system has been at least in the last few years. The problem with the system is partly the time frame inevitably is short. Secondly, the composition, with great respect to the elected members of the development assessment panels, the composition of development assessment panels is weighted so heavily in favour of the planning fraternity that you've got to work damn hard to get past that. And that's what we're asking this council to do. We're asking you to say to the community, yes, we are prepared to do that.
My supplementary question is along the lines that we often see these type of development applications coming in over the Christmas period. I know that the planning department are under a lot of pressure and people take holidays as well. So the question therefore to Mr. Needham is any chance that we can ask the DAP for an extension request? Request for extension? Not at all. Okay.
No, we've already asked the proponent for an agreement to an extension to the advertising period, and they've not been back. Look, yeah. No, in short, no. And whether effectively it's the turnaround time for the application, you know, is meant to be 90 days, whether it's a JDAP or a city application. So, yeah.
Councillor Richards.
Thank you. Mr. Needham, is there a way that we can get access to the submissions for and against when this RAC 3 was put through? Are we able to access them?
Yeah, we can certainly we can pull out both the consultation material and the schedule submissions, etc.
That would be great,
Councillor. Yeah.
Given that there's such a lot of contention around the heights,
and they are listed in the RAR report itself, not by name, but.
There's no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Carr.
I'm just spending the time while Tony tries to get himself in order.
You're all not.
You ready? Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I think I should be hooked through the... Wait, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm talking on behalf of the Dunsborough Progress Association about the so-called Dugalop Centre. Quickly, I'm going to cover what's allowed, some of the history, relative size of the building, some other issues with the building, and what comes next. So is 6 stories allowed? As was discussed earlier, yes, but it has to meet other requirements. Specifically, 2.21, 251, the height of the development responds to desired future scale and character of the street and local area, including existing buildings that are unlikely to change. And if you could hold that thought or come back to that thought later when I show you some of the images, and then the other one, is it appropriate for the existing planned character of the area? So he's gone over that. We understand, so going to my second paragraph, first, 6 stories was never envisaged for Dunsborough. It's out of the character for the future as seen by the community. Unfortunately, we understand the planning department thinks otherwise, and consequently, the RAR will strongly support the development as is. Now, we're hearing this from another developer who said he's actually seen the RAR, obviously not the finished product, but he's seen the RAR, and he's astonished how supportive it is of this development. Now,
Sorry, Mr. Needham, has the RAR been authored as yet?
I haven't seen the RAR as yet. I think, Andrew, how many words do you reckon you've written?
About 9 pages.
Yeah, but it's no one has seen the RAR.
Well, all right.
Absolutely, categorically, anyone who says that is telling an untruth.
All right. Well, then they're confused then, but they do certainly have the strong feeling that the planning department is in support of it. So if that's the case, and this voice goes unchallenged, it's almost certain the development will be approved. We therefore ask you to speak up and support the community that elected you, because your credibility is necessary to win this argument. And the way this works, just very briefly, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we won't know the RAR until 5 days before the JDAP meeting, and I assume the councillors won't either unless you give them a special briefing to that effect. So we're all in limbo till 5 days before. And so all I can... I'm sorry?
At least
2 weeks. Well, it's not for the council, and not for the community. The community's 5 days.
I don't know if you'd like me to...
Okay, your credit is... So what can you do? According to DAP guidelines, local government who wish to make a statement can make a submission to the DAP. It could be part of the RAR or it could be a separate submission. Specifically, we're asking you to follow DAP guidelines and have an independent planning consultant make a presentation to the JDAP on your behalf. As the practice notes set out, the mayor could make this, or the deputy mayor, but obviously they are on the DAP, so JDAP, so they can't. And so number C is what the DAP recommends, which is the council appoint an independent planning consultant. And as it points out at the bottom there, this has been done by several councils, and it's the preferred approach by the DAP. Some history, 2017 RAC 3 was passed. And specifically, it says the purpose was for allowing mixed use and a relaxation of height limits, quote, a relaxation of height limits to align with our codes, effectively enabling up to 4-5 stories. There's no mention anywhere of 6 stories. Public comments, 46 were opposed
to specifically five stories. Six were in favor, although six, only one was a resident. Again, no mention of six stories. Now, the RAC was justified in their feedback to those comments by saying, by quoting a number of different strategies and a conceptual plan. Did any of those strategies mention six stories? The planning department likes to say this has all been approved and supported by the council, but six stories? Not really. This is the information sheet that was given to people, when, or the community, when the amendment was presented. If you look down the bottom right-hand side, it's highlighted. Specifically, it says, our codes effectively enabling up to four to five. Enabling up to four to five. What's happened since then? Okay, the planning department may believe it's responsible to the state government, and it's understandable because all planning is delegated from the state. However, you as councillors are somewhat responsible to the community. It's therefore understandable you will not always agree with the planning department. And it's certainly not a situation unique to the city of Busselton. Margaret Rivers has gone through that quite recently. We will be coming back to you to revisit the actual coding. You can't be expected to respond to every new building DA. And the architect of the other six-story building coming on has told the DPA in a briefing that RAC3 is an inner city code, not a code for a town like Dunsborough. I think he termed it crazy. However, we can't let this development go through as it is. What do other places do? Byron Bay, that's the yellow is 11 meters, 11.5 meters. We're getting 20 meters, more than 20 meters. Port Douglas, four stories max. We've got six stories. Future. This comes out of the DA for the next building, and they're showing how their building will fit in with the Dunsborough of the future. That's not our vision of Dunsborough. That's no one in Dunsborough's vision of the future. And we need your help to make sure that doesn't happen. Because once this building gets approved, that one will get approved, and then the next one will get approved. So relative sizes, this tree, this is the development site. The big tree there happens to be 21 meters. So it's the height of the building. And you'll see on the, you know, maybe we can't see it, but on the right tree, this little dot in the sky, that's a drone. So we actually measured that height. And that's really handy because anyone can go around and look at where that tree is in Dunsborough and realize there's going to be a building there. So that's what we've done. And you've got to ask, why are there no comparisons in the DA with other buildings? Why are there no 3D images comparing the bulk with other buildings? Well, we know the answer, but it's pitiful. They're not required to give them. So these images I'm going to show you, they may not look credible. Like, wow, that's crazy. Unfortunately, they are accurate. And next time in Dunsborough, look for the tree. It's big. So this is the building from Caves Road. This is like, welcome to Dunsborough. This is looking down from Cape Naturalist and Dunbay Road roundabout. The buildings in front are the new brewery and restaurant. And in the back, you've got the two buildings. And you can see at the top of that building, you can see the top of the tree that's still there. So that's the height. Here we are looking at Dunbay Road. On the right, you've got the existing shops. On the left, you've got the new development. And actually, in this case, it's probably understating new development, because if you look at the doorways, you'll see that it's actually a little smaller than reality. So this is the whole stretch. So you've got on the right, existing building. Remember that the thing I was mentioning at the beginning as to what allows a building to be. And that existing building, well, they're not going to be knocking down that tomorrow. And on the left, there's a new building that's going up as we speak. So that's the future. Now, does this fit in any way to that? And then if you look at the front, it's all glass. It's clear windows into their convenience store. Is that activation on the main street of Dunsborough? So if you're going up Dunsborough, Dunbay Road, old building, new building, and then back to the brewery. And no one could say this is compatible. And again, maybe someone's lied to me, but I hear the planning department says, oh, this building complements the brewery. Really? So this isn't my image, okay? This is put out by the developer. And to me, it looks like an inner city massive hospital. And that's what they want in the middle of Dunsborough. And the height limit's supposed to be 21 meters for six stories. Well, actually, roof level 2135. The chimney, the top of the elevator shaft is roughly 25. They don't actually give that number, but it's measured. It looks like it's about 25. There are other issues. As I say, the frontage, Dunbar Road, the zero activation. Traffic stats are out of date, mostly to winter 2018. But now we see in the paper, oh, wait a second, they've been updated. But have we seen those updated figures? No. So we have to comment on outdated figures, which will then get rejected at the JDAP because they're saying, oh, well, we've updated the figures. Well, good planning. Impact on Dugalup Brook, putting a basement right adjacent to the brook. We're not quite sure. So in conclusion, this will be the tallest building and perhaps the largest south of Bunbury. If it gets approved, the next sixth story on Seymour Boulevard will certainly get approved later in January. The community is almost, maybe totally, unanimously opposed when they understand the scale. And I hope you'll be given the submission statistics. So the deadline on submissions is Friday. I hope you'll be given the statistics on those submissions before the JDAP. New councillors can do something to try to modify this building, and we please urge you to get it scaled back. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony. Ladies and gentlemen in the gallery, we need to stop this. It's not a circus. Applause is not appropriate. We do respect each speaker. Thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Sharp? Councillor Ryan?
Mr. Needham, I think this one is to you. At that meeting in 2016, one of my questions was, why is the increase or relaxation in heights for buildings in the CBDs of Busselton and Dunsborough deemed necessary, especially to R80 and the introduction of RAC3? And the answer was, the proposed R80 density increase in Dunsborough will continue to be controlled by clause 5.8 of the scheme. Now, I've looked at 5.8 of the scheme and it's changed. That refers to airports. In other words, retaining the two-storey and three-storey height controls. The amendment proposes to alter clause 5.8 by increasing the permitted height from 7.5 metres to 9 metres and from 10 metres to 12 metres, depending on the distance of a property from the mean high water mark. Can you explain to me how you can go from retaining a two-storey and three-storey height controls to now going to six storeys?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, it's a different context. So that question relates to land that's coded R80, not land coded RAC3. And the scheme, the amendment was explicit that the height controls, I guess what you might call them, generic height controls, which are the two and three storeys, wouldn't apply in the RAC3. So the question that you've just put there was a relevant question, and it related to Amendment 50 that came before the council, if I recall correctly, just prior to the election, oh, and then afterwards as well. My memory's caught up with me. But not in this particular context.
Well, I specifically asked a question, especially to R80 and the introduction of RAC3.
Yeah. There's a series of documents, strategic planning documents, that the council has considered and adopted, which have identified that there would be a planning rationale, there would be a direction to support denser development in our two main town centres over a considerable period of time, and a lot of discussions around, wouldn't it be great if we could get some apartment developments and mixed use type development in our centres. That was the underlying rationale for both introducing changes to the scheme that actually allowed residential development, because prior to that time, arguably, residential development wasn't allowed at all, and that also allowed for greater density and greater height. So that's fundamentally why. And if I could, I had sat through multiple briefings, discussions with councillors, with community members, with members of the business community, saying, why can't we get apartment development? Why can't we get mixed-use development in our town centres? So the amendment, the strategic direction, was developed on that basis. Whether it should be six stories or four stories, etc., that is obviously a more complicated and more nuanced question. But the fundamental rationale as to why we moved away from, effectively, in most of our town centres, it would have been a default three-storey height limit. And prior to that amendment, it wouldn't have just been three storeys. It was, if I recall correctly, it was 10 metres and three storeys, which is often quite difficult to get, particularly a commercial building with greater floor-to-ceilings within that. So that's the fundamental rationale. It's been a very consistent direction from the council. But I should add again, whether that's four or six or, you know, whatever the height control is, that of course is something that is different and is more nuanced. And the council, through the Dunsborough Precinct Structure Plan process, will have an opportunity to reconsider those controls and certainly the documentation that we're developing as officers is proposing some changes to those controls, but now is not the time or the place for me to set out what those office supports might be.
Further question, if I may, Mr. Mayor. So where did it get from the promise of a two-storey, three-storey height to now 6 metres? Where was the consultation with the community, and at what stage did that happen, you know, comprehensively? What document, what process?
It didn't go from 2 to 3 to 6. So that
it has.
No. The quote that you, the question and the process that you read through, that so I thank you to Mr. Sharp and to Mr. Kyle who have I think, I'm pretty sure correctly, indicated that the consultation material at the time back in 2016, I think it was, referred to 4 to 5. I think, but I'm not sure, and we'll be able to check in coming days, that what has occurred is that the state has changed what RAC3 means.
And
right.
That's probably gone from 4 to 5 to 6, and there's a range of other changes as well, including one of the changes that certainly Mr. Kyle pointed to, which is just the whole way that part of the residential design codes is structured. So we can answer that question in terms of the 4 to 5 to the 6 and provide the information that Council Rich has requested in coming days. But since the council decisions in 2016-17, it does sound as though the change has been from 4 to 5 to 6, but it's not quite that simple.
So you're suggesting that it's actually the government that have changed the RAC codings, the R80 codings and so on, which makes for denser buildings?
Yeah, there's a whole raft of changes that they've made, and that happens. It doesn't just happen with the RAC3 code or the R80 code. It can happen with R20 or the lower density codings as well. Yes, that does occur. And at the time that the amendment that introduced the R80 and the RAC3 was introduced, the lowest density of the AC codes, which is the activity centres code, was RAC3. And one of the issues and one of the reasons why officers recommended one of the AC codes was that the other codings didn't deal well at all with mixed-use development. You know, it was arguable at least before that you could have essentially an unregulated amount of commercial floor space and then have your residential floor space on top of that if you just had a mixed-use zone and you had, say, an R80 coding in place. We didn't feel that was appropriate. There's been changes. There's now an RAC4 coding in the codes. There's also what's called an RAC0 coding, which allows you to essentially replace whichever parts of the codes you'd like to replace with something that's in your own town planning scheme. So there's more options. And again, I sort of feel a little bit like a broken record, but that's the Dunsborough Precinct Structure Plan process. We're looking at all those things.
Councillor Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. I agree with what you and Mr. Cole have said, that I don't think there's any appetite for the community, from the community, to have a building of this height. Now, I think probably what has happened here is that Dunsborough's been lumped in with Busselton back in 2016-17, and everyone's gone, oh, okay, a bit more density in the CBDs, that's great, without actually really thinking about what it actually means, and that this perhaps this day wouldn't come where we would get an application for a six-storey building that, okay, well, four storeys sounds okay. In Busselton, maybe even six storeys would be, it has a much more robust CBD, and in that respect, six storeys probably wouldn't have as much of an effect. And I think what's happened, there hasn't been enough consideration around the difference between Busselton and Dunsborough and the heights. And my concern is now that even if, as a council, we support, you know, we don't support six storeys, my fear is, and even if we put forward a robust debate, is that that we're going to be overturned again by the DAP, and that they're not going to listen to the community. I'm not sure how we can really drive this home, even if, as a council, we agree or we don't agree. That's my concern, is that this will get through. Then it sets a precedent, as you say, and for another six-storey building, before we know it, we have a whole multitude of six-storey buildings in our in the Dunsborough CBD.
Can I respond to that question?
Well, I just want to say in the first instance that I'm unable to comment as a member of the DAP on this specific until such time as there is a hearing, and that is the judicial process.
Yes,
councillors, should you have a mind to call a special meeting to determine a position on this application, you should be very careful on what you are saying now prior to reading any of that information, if I can just give you that warning. Councillor Wright.
I just want to further on from what you were saying before, Paul. So the government can say, right, tomorrow we're going to change these R codings again. So technically, Dunsborough could have a 10-storey building tomorrow if they change the... I'm being a bit blasé, but you know, you understand what I'm getting at.
Yes, I do. So I'm not aware of any proposal to change the R codes to change the high control, so I'll just get that one out of the way. But yes, the R codes form a part of all local government town planning schemes across the state. And essentially the R codes, with some variation, but RAC3 or R10 or whatever it is, means the same in most respects in Busselton as in Bunbury as in anywhere else in the state. And the way the planning legislation is set up, the state can make amendments to the R codes, and they essentially amend every town planning scheme across the state simultaneously.
So what trigger does a council have to say that we want to control our building heights to what was the original intent?
At risk of sounding like a broken record twice, in this particular case, the Dunsborough Precinct Structure Plan, across much of our city, however, we have got a carve-out, if you like, for height, which is the 2- and 3-storey height controls that we've been discussing this evening and previously.
So could I answer Councillor Cox's question? And she did ask.
Well, there was a question.
Unless the council tries, it will fail. So just trying is the first step. And if you look at what happened with the Puma situation, the council was opposed to it, and the JDAP agreed with the council and eventually won. We don't know who's going to chair this JDAP because the chair is the planner, so he can't chair it. So we could have the same chair that was there. He's still there. He's a chair in Perth. He could be the chair, or there could be another chair. So it's not a lost cause. It's a lost cause if we don't fight it, but it's not a lost cause. And clearly, whether six stories are allowed, but it doesn't fit in. There's already regulations why it should not go ahead. But that's only going to happen if we say that we don't think it fits into our future. And if our planning people say it fits into our future, then we're sunk. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp.
Thank you for your time.
Next booking I had received was from Mr. Jeff Davies. Also in relation to the development on Dunbay Road.
Thanks for your time.
Mr. Davies.
I haven't. This is my first council meeting I've ever addressed. So I'm a pretty proud moment, actually. So thank you for your time today. And just a bit of background. My name's Jeff Davies. I've got a local. I've been local for 20 years in Dunsborough. I own a liquor store in the town, Easy Liquor Store. So I've been a small business owner there for the last six years. What I came to talk to you about specifically, you'll probably be surprised, is not sort of the aesthetics of the building itself, nor might you think a liquor store going in there either. It's the liquor store will be the least of my worries, really, if this transpires. And the main reason, the thing that impacts this the most for me, is a document from the PDFs that we're able to download. So it's the track, the transport impact assessment. So the transport impact assessment is really why I'm here. It's looking through it, and I'm using a gentleman today wrote into the paper, Colin, I can't think of his last name, but this is really what you get when you throw something together in 12 months. And I'm using the developer's words here. This document underpins essentially the workings of the building itself, the functionality of the building itself, and its main impact on parking and traffic will have a major impact on the town, regardless of how the building actually looks. And to submit something like this that underpins the proposal itself, you know, really is shameful, because I'll go through it. So there's two main aspects to this. To what I want to talk about, parking and the transportation, the traffic sort of side of it, I beg your pardon. So the traffic side of it, and I'll start with the things that make me laugh first, because we probably need a laugh at the moment. So it's things like this, integration with surrounding area, nil. So that's the integration with the building itself in its surrounding area. That's the 0.6, no minimal impact. Impact on neighbouring areas, 7.6, minimal impact on local residential areas or business developments. 7.8, road safety, no particular concerns. So no concerns over three egress-regress sites, one of them being a heavy vehicle regress site onto Dunbay Road, crossing over footpaths, no safety concerns there. Trucks turning right, because they'll have to turn right when they come onto Dunbay Road, because you won't want them going through the town. So no safety concerns there. Point five, which was again a blank page pretty much, changes to surrounding transport networks, nothing to report there, but there's obviously a roundabout going in at the end of Cerulean Road and Dunbay Road, I believe. Well, that's what I've seen in the plans. So no reference to that if that roundabout whatsoever. So that's just the basis of it. So to address it specifically, so the impact, so the assessment period was, and this is in 7.1, Saturday 11 a.m. to 12 noon on July the 24th. So they've chosen 1 hour of one day in the middle of winter, and then used their traffic formula to extrapolate that data. So that's the data that's generating this report. That underpins all their traffic movement and assumptions that they're making. And this report's full of assumptions, and the assumptions are wrong. So if you're generating all that traffic movement from 1 hour in the middle of winter, so ignoring 6 weeks of busy school holidays at Christmas time, ignoring 2 weeks of busy Easter, there's 2 months worth of traffic that's just been ignored. Ignoring that, you get to this point. And the other things that it looks at, and I'll go through these in a bit more detail, but there's no egress regress diagram in it, so there's no workings of how they put on a map or a picture or a diagram to show how the traffic will move through that building and out onto Dunbay Road. So that's been left off. There's a 6 metre, the egress regress coming off Cerulean Way is 6 metres wide. My garage at home is 6 metres wide for a 2-car garage. So that's the area that's going into that car park. I'm just going through these. So there's those concerns there. There's a formula that they use which I will need clarification on, because it looks at the increases in car traffic and it negates the increases by saying it's less than 100 cars per day. So even though they've nominated that, yes, there will be increases in traffic flows, it's under 100 cars a day, therefore it's negated. So I'd like clarification on that, if someone can help me with that later on. They've assumed the distribution of development traffic. So what they've done up is a chart which assumes, based on that flow diagram and the modelling that they've done, that 15% will go one way, 20% will go another way. So that assumption about traffic flow, again, has just been assumed from the data that they've collected and then presented in this as a diagram. It's not underpinned by any facts or anything. They haven't, an analysis of intersections and development crossovers in 7.4, they haven't addressed the intersection of Cerulean Way and Cape Nat Road. So the focus of that analysis all pins around the Dunbay Road Cerulean intersection. They haven't addressed anything of what happened with traffic, because traffic will go down that Cerulean Road. And Cerulean Road is under your care as a council, it's a local thing. Yeah, just wrapping it up in point form, and the parking. So lastly, the parking, they've nominated 174 bays for parking. So 55 of those are behind a gated gate, that's for their residents, which leaves 119. 82 staff they've nominated to work in that grocery, 500 square metre grocery store, 260 seat restaurant, so they've nominated 80 staff. So there's 80 more bays gone. Out of the 119, leaves 37 car bays. The impact it's going to have on me is that there aren't enough car bays in this complex to service that. 37 car bays. I've got over 40 car bays just for my bottle shop, and it's 274 square metres. So they've nominated 37 car bays for customers, I guess, to bring them the money so they can survive in this shopping complex. So what will happen. People will saturate other car bays and car parks in our area. They'll come and park in front of my shop. And if they're parking in front of my shop, they're taking a customer away from me. So that's taking away my livelihood. So taking away my bays, my car bays, is taking away my livelihood. And that's what will happen, because this hasn't been thought through effectively with this document. It's assumptions that are being made, big assumptions. And it's not a proper document. I feel sorry for you, Paul, to have to go through that and then try and make an assessment on parking and traffic, because I couldn't. And I've read a few of these reports. It's not my first one I've ever read. I would be more concerned about what it will do to other businesses in the town and the impact that it will have on them, because it will. These people will spread out. You can't park there. So you're going to park in front of the doctor's surgery. You're going to park in the Coles park. You're going to come across to me and park in my car base as well. It needs to be readdressed. That's why I say I'm not here to talk about the building itself. I just think serious assessment has to be done on this in further detail. You can't whip this together in 12 months. It's a big development. You know, it will have a major impact on a very small road. Cerulean Road is a very small road. It's a 40k an hour zone road, and it's an access road. It's not a route road. And it will have a dramatic impact on the town if it's not thought through properly, the sheer amount of traffic that we're going to have.
Thanks, Jeff. Please stay where you are. Just try and get an answer to that question that you raised during your presentation on the TIA, and was it the 100 vehicles?
Could you? Yeah, that would be great. So
what was that one? So just...
I've got to find it. I've got it here.
I can't answer the question specifically, but certainly know Andrew Watts, who's the case officer, has sat through and has been scribbling some notes down. What I can say is that a number of the issues, I guess, that Mr Davies raised were issues that we raised when we reviewed the traffic impact assessment. And so I guess over the journey and in putting a report together, we have had an independent peer review undertaken of the TIA by other traffic experts. We have asked the proponents to update, provide additional information, et cetera, in terms of the traffic assessment. And then I'm sure Andrew will correct me if I'm wrong, but we've then put that back to the independent traffic consultants as well. And in particular, the initial TIA that assessed, I think you're correct in your assertion that it only addressed the Dunbay-Cerillion intersection, was one of the things. And we've said, no, there's a number of other intersections that could be impacted by this development, and you also need to assess the impact on those intersections. So,
yeah, thank you. It was this one here. It says, as under 7.5, as a general guide, an increase in traffic of less than 10% of capacity would not normally be likely to have a material impact. It goes on, but then it says, all sections of the road with an increase greater than 10% of capacity should therefore be included for analysis. For the ease of assessment, an increase of 100 vehicles per hour for any lane can be considered an equating to around 10% capacity. Therefore, any section of road with the development traffic would increase flows by more than 100 vehicles per hour for any lane should be included for analysis. That was
I'm not across the details of those.
Yeah.
Either that report or how that traffic assessment is done, I tend to look at it from a bit more of a intuitive perspective and let other people sort the technical details out. But certainly we have asked, and there has been assessment done on a range of other intersections.
Am I correct in saying that the roundabout is planned for that Cerillion Naturalist Terrace? Not Naturalist Terrace, Dunbay Road? Yeah, I've seen plans as part of the streetscape changes in Dunsborough that have been occurring.
I don't know that it is. It is definitely a question that we have. I don't know exactly where we've landed.
Yeah.
But the whether this development creates a need for a roundabout at Dunbay and Cerillion has been very much a live question in terms of our assessment of this application. I'm not entirely sure where we've landed on that at this stage, though.
Okay. All right, thanks.
So, Mr Davies, obviously, as well as being able to present here at Council, you, of course, are allowed to make a submission through the City's Your Say platform. We encourage that.
Yep.
You're also able to book to make a presentation through the DAP process at the time of the hearing.
Okay.
So to all of the panel members.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Thank you.
I'll give you some information on that. Sorry, Councillor Richards, did you have a question?
Yes, it's more a question for Mr Darby. Is there capacity at all to increase the capability of Cerillion Way? Because it does, you know, it's effectively a laneway, really. So there doesn't appear to be much capacity to widen it or accommodate this level of traffic that is already a problem in the summertime. You know, when, you know, it's, when you drive there, you can see it already.
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer. There isn't a great deal of capacity. You could do things like remove parking and stuff like that. There's the options of, for example, we're constructing a roundabout on the intersection of Cerillion and Nat Terrace. I've always got my Nat Terrace again. Which is to improve capacity and vehicle movement in that area. There are options that we've been looking at for the future associated with Cerillion and Dunbay Road, but as Paul said, we haven't landed on anything yet. That was for different options through the townscape. It's difficult in the sense that the road has the capacity to take a considerable number of vehicles. It's the correct width, etc. It's just there's a lot of vehicles that go through it. So the road in itself, yes, it's suitable for the amount of vehicles that go through. It's just it's a town centre. You get a lot of vehicles. It looks it's busy.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Davies.
Thank you. Thanks.
Received a booking from Mr. Travis Sprigg from... Travis, you here? Acting CEO, JSW and Bunbury Regional Care College, is that the one?
Community College, Mr. Matt.
Sorry.
Similar to Mr. Davies, this is my first time, so thank you for your time and letting me present.
Thanks, Travis. You have 5 minutes and then councillors may wish to ask a question.
Thank you. So yes, my name is Travis Sprigg. I'm acting director for Bunbury Regional Community College and acting CEO for Job Southwest Community Services, currently acting for Posey Barnes, who's off on some well-earned long service leave. I think some of you may know her. I was supposed to be joined by Brett Piggott, our principal. However, he's had to rush home to some sick children. So you may recall I wrote to yourself, Mr. Mayor and councillors, a couple of weeks ago, highlighting some of the issues we're experiencing in finding a new Busselton campus. But before I get to that, I thought I would share a little bit about Bunbury Regional Community College. For those of you who don't know what we do and I guess what we're about. So a bit of background. We first opened our Bunbury campus in 2018 and that was followed by our Busselton campus in 2020. Currently we have 150 students across those two campuses and that's looking to grow to 180 in 2022. So obviously there's been quite a bit of growth throughout those years. We're a not-for-profit care school and that's an acronym for Curriculum and Re-engagement in Education. We're a secondary school, but predominantly just servicing years 10, 11 and 12 at the moment. Currently in Busselton, it's just at years 11 and 12. Our educational program utilises big picture learning design, which focuses on individual students' interests and passions. Our students present with varying and sometimes multiple challenges and barriers to learning, including mental health issues, transient lifestyles, learning difficulties, gender dysphoria, historical trauma, just to name a few. And unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of this in society and the community, not less. Our mission is to re-engage students in their learning and to support them to develop their skills to become positive, productive members of society. And our mission is quite simply to be a care school for the Southwest. And a part of that is considering a name change to not be town specific. Obviously we've got a campus in Busselton, Bunbury, but what that really means is across three things. So we're looking to continue to establish and enhance our model of education through the Southwest to meet the needs of towns and communities, demonstrating that students that have disengaged can be re-engaged by first looking at the individual, understanding their challenges and delivering personalised and tailored education, while also supporting them mentally and emotionally. And lastly, assisting them develop real-world skills, gain qualifications through work experience, recognise trade qualifications, finding employments or other pathways through to further education. And in that regard, we're delighted this year we've had our first two students accepted into university through alternative pathways to ATAR. Last week we had our Year 12 graduation in Bunbury and it's quite simply inspiring to hear the stories of these students, what they've overcome, to hear them present and talk with confidence about what they've learned, the job they've got or the additional study they're planning to do, which is obviously different from each individual, but the one thing that we saw, they leave with confidence, qualifications and a plan to make it in the real world. And there was a good quote I've come across recently by the former Auditor General Colin Murphy. He said, "A good education is powerful. It gives children skills, opens up opportunities and often a key part of overcoming disadvantage." Now this couldn't be truer for our cohort and the sad reality is for someone that if we don't catch them and re-engage them, there's not only a high likelihood of negative consequences for the individual, but for society and community more broadly, through increased welfare, impact on crime, poverty, and increased mental health issues. So now to the property. So over the last year, we've been actively looking for an alternative premises in Busselton, which has been a challenge. Next year, we are planning to introduce a Year 10 class in Busselton and grow to approximately 40 to 50 students in total. And we would expect to have a wait list across all those years because we run small classes of 15 to 18. Now, our preference is to purchase a property that we can fit out and allow space for future growth. Finding that property, again, has been the challenge. But now we're getting to the end of this year, needing to be ready for next year and to be out of the old tennis club. And we were made aware of the CQ University Study Hub at 38 Peel Terrace. I feel that would be perfect for our needs, if even if under a short-term arrangement, if it was made available. And so lastly, we would welcome the opportunity to showcase our Bunbury campus. We have fitted that out to how we sort of see a way to engage students and to sort of reflect our educational philosophy and fit for purpose design, which we're ultimately looking to do in Busselton. So thank you for the opportunity, and I do appreciate the City of Busselton's ongoing support.
Thank you, Travis. So just for councillors who aren't aware, when the tennis club relocated to the new premises, we agreed to a one-year rental agreement with BRCC. To enable them some time to set up and to offer their services in Busselton and to seek an alternative or purchase a property. We then had the situation last year, obviously with COVID, where it was very difficult situation, and we extended that lease for a further 12 months until the end of this year. And we have now gone out for expressions of interest for that building. And we have also received notice, as I did inform you, from Central Queensland University that they would be vacating their lease, although they still have a lease for a couple of years, and they have paid their lease in advance up until well into this year, or next year. That's where we are. Unfortunately, we've been unable to find a suitable property in the interim. Although, it's a hard market to be looking into. Councillors, questions? Councillor Richards.
Yes. Firstly, I do need to declare an impartiality interest because my daughter would like to attend college next year. She has friends there. It's a long discussion to be had in our house. But I wonder if you, I suspect that you would have robust reporting guidelines on outcomes that you're achieving in the campus and in the form of perhaps an annual report or some such thing. So it would be helpful to be able to see that, to ensure that, you know, you are achieving the outcomes that you're setting out to achieve, to, validate the importance of having a campus in this region.
Absolutely. So, yes, we release an annual report every year. We've recently refreshed the strategic plan, which has emphasised some key measures on which we're focusing on. For this year, we're currently really honing in on those outcomes, and not only outcomes for Year 12s, we can now sort of show what qualifications they leave with, where they go, but then within those other years, we're getting better and putting in place some sort of better frameworks to kind of track numeracy and literacy improvement over the course of the year. So that's somewhat in its infancy, but that's very much a focus, and there'll be a report going to the board, our board next week on that.
Councillor Love.
So this may be going back a while, but correct me if I'm wrong. Did you used to be located across from the, like, now Coles Central on the corner there? Because I do believe that there was a...
JSW may have been there.
Yeah, I don't... So we've been 2 years in Busselton, and I gather both of those have been at the...
Oh, okay, yep, all good.
So you, part of your organisation is JSW, which is Jobs Southwest, I'm
correct. Understand.
So you already you have a property on Albert Street, which is the old, used to be the old steam laundry or something, I believe.
Yeah, we are a tenant in that building. We do not own it. That was a negotiation, that was a potential purchase, and we are still in discussions regarding the purchase of that building. It's getting tight, though, for such a purchase in terms of completing and getting us ready for next year, assuming we can agree on terms.
What are some of the parameters around what you're looking for, Travis, for a central location, I'm guessing, for the students, for public transport? So you're talking about three, potentially up to three year groups of up to 18 students.
Mm-hmm.
So 60 with staff.
Yep, that sounds about right. So looking at if you looked at three individual classrooms, 40 to 50 square metres, and then some obviously breakout areas, kitchen facilities. So in terms of the floor space, ideally if we were going to buy 400 odd square metres of internal area, 1,000 square metre block, so there's some sort of, ideally some places for gardens and, again, sort of outdoor breakout areas and other sort of recreation activities.
Any further questions, councillors? All right, well, we'll continue that dialogue between the staff and yourselves and see if we can't put our heads together and think of some appropriate place and help you with your search, because it is an important service, and I know both our local high schools speak highly of the service and the need for it, and obviously they fund it through their... their revenue streams as well. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming along.
Thank you.
That's all the bookings that we've received. Are there any other members of the public who would like to speak? Please come forward.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm Michelle Shackleton of the Beta Bay Action Group. I felt it necessary to address this community access session in order to clear up a few untruths, falsehoods, and in some cases downright lies that have been directed towards my group in recent months. Number one, despite his very obvious attempt to establish his profile as an expert on the history of the Beta Bay Action Group during the last council meeting, I wish to state for the record that Ross Payne is neither a member nor an expert on any feature of the Beta Bay Action Group at all. He has no details of the size of our membership nor the names of our members, which means that when he is excessively rude to members of the community online, assuming that the large number of individuals who express their disappointment and or anger at the council's decisions or anger are members of our group, it is merely his assumption. But that brings us to the next point, number two. In stark contrast to his comment, to the comments by councillors Henley, Carter, Riccelli, Ryan and Richards, Mr. Payne's statement that the BPAC is not a divisive issue in our community shows a considerable lack of knowledge and understanding about issues causing concern among the people he is meant to represent. In fact, he seems somewhat confused by the issue because 2 seconds later he contradicted himself by saying the BPAC was a tool, in fact, used by the Beta Bay group to divide the community. I personally find this idea quite bewildering. Why on earth would we be trying to divide the community? What possible cause or use could this be to any of us? Although I suppose if we could work out what Ross Payne believes he's doing by attacking people in his emails and on Facebook, perhaps we might understand the logic behind it all. Number three, Mr. Payne further claimed that the Beta Bay Action Group was once called the Ford Road Action Group. Missed it again. He almost made a factual statement when he alluded to the fact...
Sorry, Ms. Shackleton, You've more than welcome to make your presentation.
Yep.
If you're referring to Councillor Payne, please use the title. And we don't need the dramatics. Thank you.
Okay. Although it's okay when other people have dramatics in the chamber. He alluded to the fact that we wanted a different name to the one we settled on.
Are you adversely reflecting on a suggestion that I've made as a presiding member?
Other people have been here and been somewhat animated and the rest of it.
Thank you.
And there hasn't been a comment made. Where are we? He also, almost made a factual statement when he alluded to the fact that he wanted a different name, we wanted a different name to the one that we settled on. And if you listen carefully, you might learn something. In August 2020, the group wanted to be known as the City of Busselton Action Group to reflect on the fact that we represented the entire electoral region. However, the city didn't like that idea, and thus the Bay to Bay Action Group was formed. Number four, when nominations closed for the City of Busselton Council elections, Anne Ryan stood aside as president of our Bay to Bay Action Group, and Vice President Gordon Bleachmore took on the role of leading this fantastic group. On October 17 this year, following her resounding success in the 2021 election, Anne Ryan tendered her formal resignation from the group as both its president and as a member. The reason was given was that Anne was certain that those individuals who'd attempted to turn the community against her prior to the election would now redouble their efforts. All I can say, Anne, is if you could text me the winning numbers for Lotto next week, I'd be extremely grateful. Number five, Councillor Payne stated, and I quote, "An extraordinary amount of people responded to say that they didn't like it because other people didn't," in relation to the BPAC. Like most of your comments, Councillor Payne, a bit random. Once again, that kind of goes against your statement that the construction of the BPAC isn't divisive. But that aside, if you could substantiate your claim with some facts, I for one would be very interested to hear it. And now I'd like to shift my focus to Councillor Carter's speech, and unfortunately he's not here. First of all, he referred to perceived cost blowouts. Well, you might like to have a chat to the Finance Committee because it isn't a perception, it's a reality. Your proposal started out at 18 mil and now you're talking about 44.5, and it sort of sounds like an explosion. And I know how you and other supporters like to compare this project to the Busselton and Dunsborough libraries. Well, the same analogy can be made in relation to the contribution to our economy. And that's in quotes. There's none, nada. It's a fact that the net effect to ratepayers is that it's going to suck money out of the economy long after the loan has been repaid. And here's a newsflash. You're not investment bankers. In fact, all of the current councillors went to an election promising to rein in spending and keep rates to a minimum. And that is fair investing. You're referred to parks and gardens twice in your presentation, Councillor Carter, and again you might like to check with your finance director, but you quoted the long-term financial plan saying that the next 10 years council will spend $16 million, and then a few minutes later quoted $9.2 million per year. If you can clear that up, it would be very much appreciated. And finally, he stated that the BPAC would contribute to, and I quote, contribute to our airport, our foreshore, our AUDC and our hotel investments. Well, if you can clarify which hotel you're talking about, we'd be very interested to hear that as well. And last but not least, Councillor Henley, a few hiccups for you. Number one, can you please refrain from using the phrase handing back $10.3 million to the federal government, because you haven't got 1 cent from them yet. It's just a promise. Number two, this is probably the most important point of all, because if your statement from last week is true, I for one have made a substantial and very serious mathematical error. In fact, I missed it at the time, but plenty of people in the community heard your words and their hearts are absolutely soaring. And I quote, "The cost to borrow the maximum amount required, which may be further reduced through savings of contingencies and pending funding announcements, will result in an additional 3% rate rise built over the next 3 years, around 1% additional rate rise per annum. This equates to around $18 per year per household and for the average ratepayer to deliver and operate a facility that will benefit the broader Busselton community. End of quotes. If our Keith Sims had known this, he wouldn't have been trying to pin down the final dollar to your rate rises all these months. Following Keith's last set of questions, Tony Nottle's figures were a few dollars below $100 per year per household for the average ratepayer. So what are we all worried about? So if you wouldn't mind confirming that cost in writing, I would in fact very much like to request also a copy of the full budget for this project once that's decided as well, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Shackleton? I'm happy to provide an answer to your suggestions that I've said anything, Ms. Lee.
100%.
My additional, it possibly was slightly misleading because I understand it's only 2%, not 3%. Mm. In additional rates, over and above that factored into the long-term financial plan, which is what we've said all along.
Unfortunately, though, that 1% has been picked up and driven on...
Sorry, I answered your question.
Oh, okay. All right. You don't care. That's fine. Thank you.
Councillor Payne has a question, Ms. Shackleton.
It was more an answer. I'm pretty sure the question was something like, where did the number of people come from that said that they didn't like it because other people didn't like it? But yeah. So we've received lots of correspondence, thousands of emails, some of them, a lot of them. One of the main reasons, often the first reason given, was that the majority of people didn't support it. That's their reason for opposing it. So what they're saying is, I do not support it because other people do not support it.
No, that's an extrapolation.
No. The majority of people don't support it. I do not support this project because the majority of people don't support it. As a template sentence of one of the most common arguments.
This is on the catalyzed survey?
On correspondence that I received.
That you've received? Has anyone else received the same email?
Yeah, well, that would be addressed to councillors, but I've also heard from people that other people haven't heard from, but it's a very common argument. I'm sure it would be familiar.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor, aren't we entering into debate?
No, we're not.
Councillor Payne's responding to a question that was raised. But, yeah, we don't need backwards and forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions, councillors? Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
The public who would like to ask a question, yeah, please come forward.
Good evening, councillors and everyone else. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you. In all of my questions and statements in the council chamber over a long period of time, I quote documents and figures, page numbers, etc., to give substance and credibility to the information and questions I ask. I always endeavour to do that. Now, Henry, in your pro-BPAC speech last Wednesday, you stated, quote, will result in around an additional 3% rate rise built in over the next 3 years. Around 1% additional rate rise per annum. This equates to $18 per year per household for the average ratepayer. This information is not accurate or complete according to the Catalyst survey information. It is not $18 a year, and I acknowledge what you've said a moment ago, that it was a mistake or whatever. Excuse me. And the rate increase dollar figure has never been given by the COB. There has never been an actual single figure of what the rate increase will be for the $26.7 million. It's, as I've stated in here before, it's always part. A little bit of money, a little bit of percentage, never a total dollar figure. The Catalyst survey document had a rate increase of 2.5% to cover the $15 million borrowings, which was down the bottom left-hand side of the document. plus it quoted $37 extra for the $13 million over budget borrowing cost. As the city uses 18.55 as average rates, the added 37 increase is actually 2.5%. It's 2.5% of 100.
Sorry, 2.5%.
Well, 1855
yep.
times 2.5% is $37.
No, it's not. You're wrong. It's times 2%, almost exactly.
Well, 1% would be $18.55. Okay, I stand corrected. I'm sorry for that. Plus the increase on the $15 million borrowings. As you stated, the long-term financial plan rate increase is actually 2.5% for the first 2 years and 2.95% for the third year, which actually compounds as acknowledged by the finance director. The finance director previous figures were 58% for the principal and interest of the $26.7 million borrowings and $40 for the $1.2 million operating loss cost in rates. I was advised that you cannot assume that the $40 would be added to the rates, but it is still a ratepayer cost even if it comes out of reserves. So my question is, why are there still two sets of rate increase figures as I just outlined, and I acknowledge I made a mistake with the 2.5%, but the figure was correct. So why are there two? And the second was, to ensure transparency and accuracy, can you please advise what the actual total rate increase figure is, at least for the first year, because after that it will compound.
Well, I understand built into the long-term financial plan is a rate rise figure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll defer to Ms. Pearson to answer that. But if it's 3%, it would be to the average ratepayer sum of $54 a year based on, well, $55 based on the 18.55 average rates. There is also, and some of the figures that you're quoting about loan borrowings are for different periods. So they might be for 10 or 15 year periods, whereas with the additional borrowing, we may take that over 20 years. Or probably will take some of it over 20 years. So there are different repayment schedules on each of those sums of money.
I'm basing the information on what the 10 years of rate increases will be and what the Catalyst survey document said. It was 2.5% increase in the long-term financial plan, 2.5% on the rate increase, which was to cover the $15 million borrowings from the January 21 business case. The $37 was the cost of paying for the extra $13 million borrowings.
Yeah, if I can perhaps just seek to clarify. So the adopted long-term financial plan currently projects rate increases of 2.5% for the next financial year, mm-hmm. and then followed by 2.95% after that. That 2.5% is for the city to provide all of its services, projects, facilities. So that encompasses not only BPAC, but also the SWOT and REC strategy projects and all of those things that council's put in its plan. So to provide all of that, the rate increase is 2.5%. That also at the time included the performing arts costs at that point in time, which were $15 million loan. As well as the operating costs of $1.2 million. What the survey then outlined is that in addition to that, in order to fund the additional costs that were going to be necessary, we would need to rate an additional up to 2%, that was what we modelled, in order to afford those additional costs. Now, it was up to because that was based on our modelling at the time, and I think as it was communicated in the survey, there are potentially other options that council could consider. But that extra 2% is $37, as you quote. So the figures that I guess Mr. Noddle has provided are representative of the total project proportion of rates, so the $98. So 61 in theory was already accounted for in that LTFP, and then the additional 37 was the additional funds to proceed with the project at the higher cost. So that's how those figures work through. But obviously, until council re-adopt their LTFP and actually work out their funding strategy, those still need to be confirmed. But that's what we've modelled.
Okay, so you're saying it is $98?
No, what I'm saying is that the total cost of the project is encompassed by the 2.5% that was already projected, plus up to an additional 2%. But that may be staggered over multiple years, as has been indicated by the Mayor. So 2 or 3 years that might be staggered in over.
So the $37 could be for 2 or 3 years, is that what?
No, it could be staggered over 2 or 3 years. So you could have 1%.
So it would be $18 yep. 1 year and $18 the next year.
Yeah, that's right.
That's only 1%.
It was 2% when you add 1 plus 1.
Not per year.
We've already got $10 million worth of borrowings already in the current budget. It's already in the base of our current budget. That was adopted back in June. So the ratepayers have already got $10 million loan embedded inside the rate increase they had in June.
I understand the long-term financial plan had a $15 million loan as of January 21. But my question is, what is the actual dollar value that the city believe, using the 1,855, is going to be a rate increase for?
So I guess it's not that it will be a rate increase. It's that the BPAC, and we don't, I guess, often, we don't always cost every single project as which proportion of the rates is each project. But if we were to do that, then the figure that Tony's provided you of $98 of that 1,855 would notionally be representative of the BPAC. Again, we don't sort of necessarily do that for every single project, but that's what he's provided you. He's provided you an indication of how much of that 1855 could you attribute to the BPAC, and that's the $98.
Okay. Thank you for stating that. And that's what I've been asking for a very long time. And the last time when I suggested it was $98, I was told you can't assume that the $40 for the $1.2 million operating loss, not cost, loss. Come on, Mr. I'm finished.
I think it's really careful what Ms. Pearson said. You cannot assume that the rates have to go up $98 to pay for the BPAC. You need to be very careful because that's not the case. That's not what we're modelling in the LTFP. Because we have other levers that we can use to effectively absorb the $98.
What we modelled for the survey was the additional up to 2%. But that was modelling to give people an idea of how much extra would be required to fund the extra costs. But as the CEO said, we need to look at that LTFP now and actually determine how we're going to do that funding.
I'll give you an example, a very basic example. In our LTFP, over the next 10 years, we model what we call workforce planning. We allocate a cost for new staff to come on. And one of the things that we've modelled in the BPAC is that the staff that we're going to take on board in the year that we're going to open the building, we will actually take that from the workforce planning allocation money. It's not new money, it's already in our LTFP, but we're going to absorb the cost of the BPAC staffing from that budget allocation that already exists within the LTFP. So so we've just absorbed $400,000 or $500,000 worth of salaries and wages inside the current LTFP budget by doing that. So that $1.2 million deficit that you're sort of working out is this much rate increase? No, it's not.
I didn't work it out, by the way.
Yeah, but what I'm just saying, when you say there's $1.2 million deficit for operating costs, it's not, because we've already got $400,000 or $500,000 allocated in that year, and it's been in the LTFP now for a couple of years. Allocation for workforce planning to deal with staff that we need to put on for the BPAC. And we've got staff every year in the workforce plan. It could be in parks and gardens, they could be in mechanics. We just allocate a workforce plan amount so that when we can take on new staff, we've got money allocated towards it as the city continues to grow and delivers new services and facilities across this district.
I think what we're trying to say, Mr. Sims, it's not as blunt as saying we put the rates up 5% tomorrow and that's the total cost of the BPAC, because there are other levers within our finances that we are able to pull and other triggers to mitigate the impact on ratepayers, and that's what we're trying to do.
But when I would have thought any accountant trying to calculate figures on costs, you should have a good idea what, based on the average rate cost, which is $18.55 that you currently use, of what a actual figure would be. Now, Pearson has just acknowledged that Mr. Noddle has given us $98 in one instance. When we're talking of 37 plus whatever percentage of the 2.5 in the Catalyst survey, because I accept what you said, it doesn't tell us what the 2.5% of the rate increase was for the $15 million. It's never been stated that I'm aware of. So I just go back to, why can't we get a figure that says the average cost of ratepayers is $18.55. We estimate that in the first year the rate increase will be whatever figure it happens to be. But it's never that. Saying 1% of this and 2% of that and $37 or $18 is not incomplete information, and it can be seen as misleading, and I've stated that lots of times.
And I think, as we've stated previously also, the rate increase is not just for BPAC. So that 2.5%, that's a rate increase that's been determined by council as a projected rate increase. It's not the actual rate increase yet, that is projected, based on a whole raft of projects, services, facilities, asset maintenance. So we don't typically outline exactly what each project proportion of that 2.5% is. It's a bottom line rate increase to provide everything that we provide to the community, including in this instance performing arts.
I accept, as you said that a moment ago, but that percentage, in that percentage, has to be a figure for the $15 million loan. And that's all I'm saying. What you calculated it to be in that 2.5%, so there has to be a figure to add to the survey's information of $37. So I'll leave it at that. I ask again, Okay. Can council please refrain from giving part percentages and part figures and just give us a lump sum, and I think everyone would be happy and understand.
So, Councillor Payne, did you have a question for Mr. Sims?
I think like a lot of the confusion is coming from the using of percentages. As you were saying, these numbers compound over the number of years, but they also compound inside a single year, because if we do one thing, well, if we do more than one thing in one budget that causes the budget to change, then both of the percentages change because you've changed the base. Yep. So the figures that you're looking for are there, like to the interest rate on the loan, the size of the loan, the amount of federal government contribution, all the numbers are actually there. But then to add a layer of complexity over the top of what is that as a percentage of an unknown is actually nonsense, because you can't have a percentage of an unknown. You need the base, and you don't know the base in advance because the base will change when you make changes to it. Like, people will not get this right because they don't know what happens in future that makes that number happen. Is this...
Okay, I think you can.
I think that's a nonsense.
Let me try again. So if you have 100 and you want 101, it's a 1% increase, right? But if you have 101 and you want 102, it's less than a 1% increase. This is what's happening.
So your increasing base affects your percentages of rates over time.
The $15 million.
That's it.
You confused yourself. The $15 million, $15 million borrowing has a cost, and the cost was calculated within that 2.5% of rate increase, as Ms. Pearson said. So it has to be known when that calculation is made what the figure is, whether it's $10 or $50. I'm not even asking that. But that figure on the $15 million is known by the finance department when they do their calculations. And then in the survey it said plus $37. That's what it said for rate increase. So I'll just say again, quite simply, can you please in future, as we've asked before, just give a dollar figure of what the cost is going to be. Then it's not confusing, not misleading, not anything.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sims.
All right. On the 23rd of November, I emailed all councillors with information, and thank you for that, with information why they should not vote to proceed with this project. Included in that was this comment, Breck would lose 10% of its business based on postcode ticket sales. I was wrong. The CEO of Breck was interviewed on the ABC after the BPAC resolution and stated it was a 12% loss. She advised that they have a two-year window until BPAC is built to try and find a way to replace those sales. A question, when was the last time councillors, and this is because it was commented on at the last meeting, when was the last time councillors or officers met with Breck, the Breck CEO, regarding the BPAC impact on them?
I can provide a response. We've had contact with the CEO, our manager of events and cultural services has on a number of occasions, especially through the development of the business event strategy. We were funded through Australia Southwest as a collective, the HART, City of Busselton, the BPAC and Breck to prepared this strategy to look at how we can work together to attract additional events, business events as such, and conferences, etc. And they fully, both performing arts centres fully support that. We also have spoken about how we can share resources across the three centres and also how we can work better in the future to be able to capitalise on touring performances.
The
we have a good working relationship with her.
CEO did say that she was working with the City of Busselton. I didn't say that, but I wasn't trying to be sneaky about it. She did say that she was working with the City of Busselton and HART. So, yeah, I understand and I accept that. I just didn't comment on that. But the fact is they are going to lose 12% and they don't know at this point how they're going to replace it. And that's from ticket sales to Busselton.
Thank you.
Just
Mr. Sims, you've had 20 minutes now of okay. Council's time.
All right. Again. Thank you. I appreciate that as well.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who would like to speak to Council? If not, I will declare closed the community access session and thank you all for your attendance.